Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Jed Fuchs, Emily Burke, Scott Waldman, and Ali Tabatabai from Zebrahead and Fear No Empire.
Yeah, he is.
I love him.
This episode was recorded like right after Election Day, before we knew the official results. And yeah. Some people argue that we still don't know the official results. And to that I say, I can't argue with stupid.
I fear the empire. Yeah. I really do. I'm not as strong as Ali, who describes himself as a yeller. I am paranoid that Trump is still going to find a way to steal this election. But anyway, let's go on a high note. When I was in high school, back when Emily was a toddler and Jed was, you know, like approaching double digits, I saw this band called Zebrahead open for Real Big Fish, and I became a super fan right away. I thought it was like if 311 became a punk band. And so having Ali on the show, thank you, Mr. Dan Palmer, for hooking that up. I'm overjoyed.
Aw, you balled out on this one. The show, we've really been getting a lot of rock stars lately, and he is like a bona fide rock star.
And Zebrahead has a good fan base here in the States, but in Japan, they're a main stage festival band. They have a lot of fans there, which it's kind of cool because it's the best of both worlds. Like, you can live a relatively normal life in the States and not get mobbed. Kind of like how like Dave Matthews can walk around London and he's totally fine, you know? So anyway, that's my little spiel.
And also Fear No Empire, a project that came out of the quarantine, I believe.
Right.
Would not have existed without the COVID-19 pandemic. And I think it was exactly what people were looking for.
Thanks, Obama.
But exactly. They're made lemonade out of lemons. They're finding silver linings. I think post-2020, we're going to see a huge boom. Lot of new art getting dropped from people like that. So,
and angry art.
To doing it.
Angry art is alliteration.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah, I can't believe we had Ali on the show. Like, we recorded this episode almost a month ago. So I'm glad that it's seeing the light of day. I'm glad that you, yes, you, person I'm talking to, you are listening right now. And I'm just happy with this group of people. This is one of the last episodes of the year that we're airing, and having a musician that I really admire on the show makes me goosey.
And you know what? We appreciate you guys to listening for us all this live long year. We did it. We almost made it. Home stretch. We're saving the best for last. Ali T.
And Emily. If you guys weren't watching the streams, which if you're listening to this intro live, the stream is over. And you missed another week, and that's a bad thing. So go watch your streams an hour before every show airs on Twitch. I've been really digging Twitch. I subscribe to a lot of people. Oh, I still like the Animal Crossing streams. Relaxing.
Speaking of which, we won't tell you, but maybe Ali was on the Twitch just before this. Maybe he wasn't. You may never know unless you were there.
And you're following us at twitch.tv/Waldman's Words to watch us go live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. before our show airs on Adobe at 5, which you are obviously listening to live right now.
Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Emily, close us out. I'm a happy boy.
Yeah, do all of that. You may not be listening live. You may be listening on the podcast. If so, thank you for listening to our podcast. Leave a good review, 5 stars. You know, continuously listen on Spotify, get it into your Spotify Wrapped. I know Waldman's Words was on my Spotify. That's because I have all other podcasts on Apple Podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Same. And I want to see more.
Wah, wah, wah.
Hello. Welcome to Waldman's Words, the very first episode that we are recording after this nasty, nasty election. And we've got Ali Tabatabai from Zebrahead and Fear No Empire, along with co-hosts Jed Fuchs, Emily Burke, and me, Scott Waldman, and I got 48% of the vote.
Yeah, I voted for you.
Thank you. It's a useful vote.
Yeah, totally.
Scott Waldman, not the majority winner, but still the front runner. No, we're so happy to have you on, man. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on. What a crazy time, huh?
Yeah, Scott said after the election, but it's actually just after Tuesday. The election's going to go on and on.
You're right.
The election's still happening.
You're correcting me on my own show. This is bullshit. By the way, I just want to give a shout out to Dan Palmer, who also plays in Zebrahead and is the reason why you are here now. So thank you very much, Dan. You're a nice man.
Oh, yeah.
Dan's the man.
So on this show, we normally talk about like music and behind the scenes stuff. And I think we should definitely get to that. But step one, how are we going to burn this whole MRF-er down? What's your plan?
Me? I'm just so excited to get this election over with. And hopefully the people in charge will, you know, start taking, you know, stuff with the pandemic and social unrest and, you know, systemic racism and things like that more seriously, and to start to calm the nation down and, you know, get everybody more focused on things that are, that can bring us together rather than divide us, which has been happening in the last 4 years, you know?
Well, if it's one thing 45's good at, it's calming the nation down.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, honestly, anytime I feel stressed, I just go to his Twitter and I'm stress-free.
Dude, especially if you can survive on drinking gasoline, it's really good.
Yeah. Well, I'm
in my poor diet.
So, yeah. Normal diet. So, speaking of tumultuous, crazy people going nuts on each other, the music industry. You've been in it for a long time, and many, many people have been enjoying your work for forever. And while we want to talk about everything you have going on up to and including today, what say you, we start back at the beginning?
All right. Well, those are very kind words. Let's do it.
All right. I just want to, before we start at the beginning, which I really want to do, I'll get this out of the way. I saw you guys at Irving Plaza, your direct support for Real Big Fish and Teen Heroes, who outside of the Orange County area, no one knew, were on first. And I got to tell you, of my entire life, that was one of the best shows I've ever seen. I was a huge Real Big Fish fan. They were on their My Favorite Albums tour, Why They Rock So Hard. And I saw this band that reminded me of like if 311 was a punk band, and that was you guys. And it blew me the fuck away.
Dude, thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, Real Big Fish and Zebrahead have been touring together, I feel like, since the beginning of time. We've had so many tours with those guys and have gotten to know them for a really long time. And they really helped us out by giving us pretty good slots and good tours. And so we still run into those guys, you know, a few times a year here and there. And as always, it's good to see them. And I remember that tour, actually, how all the bands got along really well. And it was just like this crazy party. I have like, I used to carry around this video camera with me everywhere I went back in the day. And lately I've been kind of going through the videos and trying to get them off of those little MIDI tapes to like, digital. And I'm just watching all these crazy moments. And sure enough, Aaron Barrett's in a lot of them just because we were on tour with them so much. But yeah, those were some really great times for us as well.
And you guys blew me away so hardcore at that show that I went and saw you again at the same venue with Cottonmouth Kings and this Kid Rocky group called Pimpadelic. I remember you guys were on that tour and I was like, this is a different vibe room. But
yeah. You know, we toured a few times with the Cottonmouth Kings as well. And you know, it's weird because I feel like, you know, I do the hip hop or like the rap parts. We got put in with some bands that I don't know how much our fans were like the same, you know, I'm not sure how many like Cottonmouth Kings fans were like, oh, dope, Zebrahead, or like Zebrahead fans were like, oh my God, Cottonmouth Kings. But we did play, a bunch of shows with those guys. And, that was, you know what? It was fun for me just because those dudes were pretty, pretty fun to hang out with. But it was a little bit awkward just because I don't think our fan base was the same.
Yeah, I wouldn't have assumed, because Pipadelic to me sounded like if like Leonard Skinner listened to rap, and it just didn't seem like the kind of crowd for that. Like, I was there for Zebrahead, and so are my friends. But anyway, enough praising you. Let's get back to the beginning. So you were born in a different country, and did you fear that empire?
Yeah, you know, I was born in Iran, and I grew up there till I was six, and then the revolution happened there, and my parents moved us here to Southern California because my grandparents were living here at the time. A few of my uncles were going to college here. So when shit went down in Iran, we moved out to La Mirada, which is, you know, Southern California. And yeah, I didn't speak a word of English. I was 6 years old. Like, my parents had to start over. They didn't really speak English. So I don't really, you know, it wasn't super stressful for me because I think I was such a, you know, so young. I didn't really understand the magnitude of like the change that was happening in my family's life. But, you know, the older, you know, as I gotten older, I have so much respect for like what my parents and my family was able to do to start over here. But like to that point, I just see what the administration here has done as far as stopping immigration to you know, brown people or people from quote unquote shithole countries. Yeah. And, you know, I couldn't imagine like coming here when I was six and then, you know, being separated from my mom and dad and put in a cage where I didn't speak the language. And there was like a pandemic, you know, like I can't imagine what these families are going through right now. But at the time I came here, you know, it was very welcoming. We moved into an all white neighborhood and they were, I remember like there were some kids on the block that were like, popular kids. Like there was one dude that was a football player and he took it upon himself, like to protect pretty much my sister and I. And if anybody ever like said anything weird or was like rude to us, he made it very clear that, you know, he wasn't having it. And so we were very welcomed. And it's such a contrast the way things seem now. It's crazy.
Yeah. Wow, man. That's awesome to hear because yeah, that story could have gone exactly the other direction. Emily and I are native to Southern California. Scott's a more recent add-on, but he's pretty native now. And being SoCal Jews, we have a long-standing history with the Southern California Iranian and Persian community. We love all of our Persian friends, and including the Persian Jews, which is just an amazing group of people.
Yeah, for sure.
But so that's an incredible story, man. And I'm sure we could fill the entire hour with just the first 6 to 10 years of your life. But we're wanting here to talk about you and your music. Did you get a lot of musical influence at home growing up?
You know, my parents, were like big music fans. It was obviously Iranian music until like I got into like, I guess, sixth grade. And I started playing basketball at that age. I got really into basketball. And all of my friends at the time, we joined, I don't know, it was like the NJB team. It's like a community basketball team. And, when we would practice, all my friends, like they were really heavy into hip hop. They would bring like NWA and like Ice Cube song, like cassette tapes. And we would be blasting that while we were warming up or like you're practicing and stuff. So I started getting like really into hip hop music at that time. And, as I got older, when I got into high school, I met Ben, and some of his friends and they were like more, punk and metal heads. And they started getting me into, you know, like Metallica and like at the time, like, NoFX and stuff like that. So I started appreciating that. And interestingly, like I looking back, I feel like I loved, hip hop because like before you went to play a basketball game, you wanted to get hyped, right? So it was like this really high energy, angry music. And then like metal and punk was the same thing, but in a different genre. And I really liked how they had this similar feel and similar energy. And so, yeah, I started listening to more, you know, rock music at that point and, started going to see Ben's band play, like at the end of my college years. He was in a band, and then, you know, I just kind of started there.
But what years were you listening to Metallica? Was it like around when the Black Album came out in the early 90s? Was that when that stuff?
I think it was like literally 90 or 89 or 90 or something.
Okay, so like Animals for All era. And
yeah.
Since you just like high BPM music.
Yeah, I loved like the energy of it, I guess. And that was like what got me into listening to it and like ultimately trying to like rap like Ice Cube or, you know, Q-Tip or Be Real or whatever. And that's kind of where I got started.
Was Zebrahead your first band ever or your first band with Ben, or had you played in other bands?
Yeah, no, I'd never played in any other bands. I used to go, Ben, like I said, was in a band at the time, and I was home for a year because I graduated college and I was getting ready to take the MCAT because I want to go to medical school. So I had a year off to study for it and take the test. So I moved back home because I was going to school at UC Irvine. I moved back home to La Habra, Fullerton area. And so I, like at night, Ben's like, hey, I have band practice. You want to go out afterwards? And I meet him at his like practice spot. And so I would be sitting on the couch and he knew I loved hip hop. So in between, because there's like three bands practicing there, in between people setting up and breaking down for rehearsal, he would get on the bass and he'd be like, hey, come up and do like a Cypress Hill rap. And I'd go up there on the mic and like do a Be Real, wannabe Be Real like rap part. And then it just kind of like Ed was there because he was in a band, in a different band practicing. And at the time, Justin was in the band and Greg, they were in different bands. And then they would just kind of jump on their instruments while I was doing that, rapping. And then we're like, I think Ben's band was releasing their first CD and they had a CD release party. And they're like, let's write one song. And in between, because all those bands were playing, there's three bands that were rehearsing at that spot. They were all playing and they're like, in between the bands, why don't you come up and we'll do one like hip hop song with you. And then that song ultimately turned out to be Check, which is on our first album. Yeah. And so we wrote that song. And then the response to that when we went up there at the CD release party was like more than it was for like their other bands. So ultimately they ended up quitting their other bands and we formed Zebrahead.
Wow. Very cool. Now, yeah, to take a half step back, I mean, we're talking about using rock and rap, which you lightly dated yourself by saying that you were listening to music on cassette tapes, but we can understand that this is an era where both rap and, well, we'll call it hip hop and punk music were really blowing up in pop culture, especially in the parts of Southern California where you were living. So did you feel like both of those cultures represented you, like you were emotionally attached to both, we'll call it punk and hip hop, or was it more of an aesthetic choice? How did you fall in with that crowd?
You know, again, it was like I had a group of friends, excuse me, that only listened to hip hop music, like my cousins and stuff. And all my friends who like Ben and his friends, they were really heavy into metal and punk. And so I kind of was in this weird spot where I had both of those influences that were around me all the time. And to me, they kind of fit together. I never felt like, oh, let's you know, shove this square into this round hole. You know what I mean? I always felt like they complemented each other. And it wasn't like, honestly, dude, it wasn't like, hey, this is going to be a career. Like, yeah. We thought we were just doing this for fun. And you know, we're just passing the time until, you know, Ben got his like suit and tie job and I went to medical school.
Right. And yeah.
So that's kind of how it started. There was no like real plan.
Well, I'm a few years younger than you and a million years older than my co-host. So I can tell you that my high school on Long Island, I feel that it was, if you're going to like segregate it by cafeteria, like there was a table of kids that listen to metal. There was a table of kids that listen to rap, that listen to punk. They didn't really coalesce, but as, you know, a lot of genre bending bands like Faith No More, Chili Peppers, 311, you guys, I feel that nowadays kids listen to, you know, Lil Wayne and they listen to Metallica. Like they really like don't lump themselves in. I only do one or the other. So I guess that's
yeah, yeah. Totally. It's really cool. It's just, you know, it allows people to like get certain things from different parts of a song, I guess. Like if it's a heavy song that you wouldn't know, like a metalhead would listen to, but then, you know, then you have what, like the Deftones, like when Chino was rapping at the time early on, like I was like, holy shit, like, dude, this guy is like,
yeah,
rapping, singing over this heavy music, and it was so cool. And nowadays I think it's become just normal. People don't see it as like, oh, that's so crazy. It's like become a normal thing.
Well, Machine Gun Kelly made the biggest pop punk album of the year this year. So there
you go. Totally. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're here. You've graduated high school. The world is in front of you. You can do so many things. You're going to medical school. Or are you? Was this
college
when you started?
And med school. College. Conversion doesn't mean they made him a doctor right away.
Like, dude,
I'm no Doogie Howser, bro.
But
that was a bad reference, too. That's a dating reference.
I was watching Family Matters at the time, man. We're all
there you go.
Constantly dating yourself. But you're a young man and the world is laid out in front of you. And I'm sure your family is pushing for the doctor route more than the hardcore rap rock career route. How did you make those decisions?
Well, like I said, I had a year off, right? So I took the MCAT and I applied to school and I managed to get into two schools. And the same week that I got my acceptance letters, we got a record deal offer. I got a couple record deal offers and I talked to my mom and dad about it. And I said, look, if you know, I'm going to be able to kind of travel the world for the next couple of years. And if it doesn't work out with the music, I can defer for 2 years because they allow you to defer some of the schools. And at that time, they were allowing you to defer. So I'm like, I can go travel, I can see the world, and then come back and go to medical school. And they were super supportive. My parents were super supportive, and so we got a record deal and we started touring, and it just kind of never stopped. You know?
Could you imagine that? Like, you think you're having a good week, but have you gotten into medical school and offers for a record all in the same week?
It was insane. It felt unreal. You know?
And so just to confirm where we're at in the story, how long had Zebrahead been together at that week?
Not very long. It's happened so fast for us. And I think it, you know, honestly, it was because at that time, bands like The Offspring and No Doubt were blowing up so big. And the record industry was like laser focused on Orange County. And they, I think, thought we had that, you know, a possibility to do the same. And so, you know, we ended up like we were just a Christmas like that year when we had like maybe a handful of songs done. And I was still waiting to get into school and all that stuff. And we were playing a show in I think it was, God, was it Fullerton, called Club 369 is where we started. And I remember it was like right before Christmas, empty. It was like the only people there were like our girlfriends at the time. And we were playing in front of nobody but them. And then the owner, manager of 369 came in that night to get the money from the bar. And he like watched us play a song. And then afterwards he came up and was like, hey, I have a friend who manages bands. And I think you guys might have something here. Would you be interested if I had him come down? And, you know, we're like, yeah, whatever, sure. And then we met with our manager, Todd Singerman. And he came and he was like, hey, I think I can get you guys a record deal. And so he introduced us to Howard Benson. And Howard, was really cool, man. He did a 3-song demo for us for free. And him and Todd started shopping it for us. And then the next time we played Club 369, which was like 2 weeks later, we had 12 record labels there, and it was like pretty much empty, but there was like 12 record label people there.
What three songs so, did you guys do with Benson?
We did, God, what was it? Check for sure. Someday, I think.
I knew it. That's my favorite song from that album. So
Oh, cool. Thank you. Yeah. I don't remember the other one though, honestly, but Howard, really taught us a lot, man. He, cause we didn't know anything about producing anything like songwriting. And we did our first two albums with Howard, and he really taught us how to like write a song, you know, and how to kind of promote ourselves. And he was a big influence for us at the beginning.
And to anybody listening who doesn't immediately recognize the name Howard Benson, Google him now and look at his long, extensive history of work. It was the late 90s, early 2000s where he was really defining the genre that we're talking about. But we're not talking about Howard. We're talking about Ali.
Yeah. You know, we actually ended up working with Howard again for our song Hell Yeah. And we kind of kept in contact with him. So it's great that he's done so well. And he's a super talented guy. And his family, too. His family, we got to know his family. They're really, really great people.
And now, as crazy as it sounds, we've already down to just 5 minutes left here in the first half of the show. So I want to sort of set us up to get more into the modern era. So Zebrahead was not around that long before you were planning international tours. And how did those early steps capitulate? How did you take those first leaps into you know, stardom?
You know, we got very lucky, especially in Japan. Japan really liked our first album, and they invited us to play Fuji Rock Festival over there. And that was kind of the beginning of our traveling overseas. And their belief in us ultimately led us to go to Japan like about twice a year for the last 25, 26 years. And then we realized, you know, there are markets outside of America. So we started venturing into England and Germany and all the rest of Europe. And, you know, there's so many, kids out there that love punk music, that love rap music. And, so we never limited ourselves only to America. And often, like even to this day, oftentimes we travel overseas a lot more than we play shows in the US.
Very cool. Yeah. You guys were really smart and keyed into your audience no matter where they were.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, punk music is still huge in Europe and in England. And it's okay here, but you know, it's died down a bit.
Well, rock music in general is way bigger. Like those festivals, the bands that kind of fall off the map here, like the Simple Plans and the Good Charlottes, still can majorly headline. And I don't know if you knew this, but I actually manage Frank Zumo of Sum 41, and you guys toured with Sum 41 in Europe earlier this year. I bet that was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Frank is awesome. Frank is a good friend of a buddy of mine, Tom. And so we had that in common on this last tour. So I talked to him a little bit. Very nice dude. And the Sum 41 tour was amazing. I've been a fan of those guys for a long time. It was nice to finally be able to, you know, play shows with them. It was actually the last tour we did before the pandemic hit.
Now, to wrap us out, we really got to cut ourselves off, but I just wanted to ask a bit about, like, what's your personal contribution to the band? Like, if I didn't know the band or your work too well, can you explain what type of vocalist you are?
I'm a yeller. I
yell. You sound like my mother.
Yeah. And not like, yeah, in the old Jewish mother yell, like, you bring more of the hip-hop.
Dinner, there's matzo ball soup.
I'm going to use that in the next song.
Please. Oh, my God.
And in my next song, I'll talk about tadib, and it'll be perfect.
Oh, my God. Now I'm hungry.
Well, that's just...
That's crispy rice for people that don't know what tadib is. It's delicious crispy rice.
Yeah, right, it is. My God, there's a restaurant by me in Westwood called Shamshiri that changed my perspective on being. And we're going to
take a break. I've gone there before. It's a great restaurant.
I bet you get served well. I think if I go there with any other gringos, it's horrible. It's forever, but it's so good.
Invite me. I'll go with you, bro. I'll go with you. I'll hook you up.
Oh my God. Yeah. You'll be my token. It'll be great.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, that's a great note to leave on. And yes, you contractually obligated to join me at Shamshiri, Mr. Ali.
I'm down, dude.
So we're going to take a short break, and we're going to go right into Fear No Empire, because I know that you've probably done thousands of interviews about Zebrahead, and I assume not as many about Fear No Empire, so I would love to get some of the juice. Wow. Well, then, there you go. So we will be back with Ali Tabatabai. Did I get it right again? I hope I did.
You did, man. 2 for 2.
Woo! 2 for 2 from the Jew for Jew. So we're going to take a short break, and we will be back.
What is up, ladies and gentlethems? Welcome back to Waldman's Words here on Adobe Radio. We have an incredible guest on the show today, Ali Tabatabai of Zebrahead, and now Fear No Empire. Thanks for joining us, man.
Dude, thank you for having me. That was an amazing intro right there.
I'm working on it. I used to say ladies and gentlemen, but ladies and gentlethems, I like way more. So
nailed it.
Did you make that up? That's really great.
I read it. I might have seen it on the TikToks, but I'll claim that I came up with it.
I had a trademark.
Too much respect for you.
Ah, shit. I should have lied. Next time I'll lie. I promise. But so, I already thanked you for being on once, but this isn't the beginning of the show. We're already halfway through. We're already knee deep into your career as a professional musician. And now we want to start talking about what you're working on more in the current era. Can you give us a quick overview of Fear No Empire?
Yeah. We got home from our last tour, which was, we talked about in the last segment, was a Sum 41 tour in Europe. And right when we got home a few weeks later, the pandemic hit, and then George Floyd was murdered. And being at home and feeling really powerless, I started just kind of writing ideas down, like lyrics and ideas. And at the time, I was texting with Dan and Ben a lot. And I started just, you know, telling them how I was feeling. And they were saying how they felt the same. And so I sent them some ideas that I had. And they're like, dude, we can make these into songs. And so we started sending each other ideas through Dropbox because, you know, everybody was quarantining. And then we wrote one song, and we thought that we weren't done with what we wanted to say. And so we decided to form Fear No Empire and kind of have an avenue to let out our frustrations and use our voice to hopefully inspire other people to use their voices to create change for the better.
Nice. So it's like a rap rock version of the Postal Service. At first,
oh my god, yeah, I love the Postal Service. yeah, I guess so. Totally. Can we just call it the Dropbox then, or something? Because we use
Dropbox.
Yes.
Updated Postal Service. Yeah, the internet. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll as a music fan, I mean, I'm used to hearing you yell on Zebrahead records, but you know, when I listen to Zebrahead, I'm not thinking this is a politically charged. It's kind of like the difference between like an Audio Slave and a Rage Against the Machine in terms of subject matter. And so it was really powerful. I mean, when you just talk about super spreaders and kids in cages, and I just want you to know that it fucking hit.
Oh, I appreciate that. I mean, we you know, feel really strongly about the messages of the songs, and we didn't even expect really to release anything. And once we, you know, played it for a few friends, they pushed us to possibly see if we can release it and, you know, write more songs and stuff. So we never planned on actually, you know, creating a band at this time. It was just kind of, worked out that way. But we're really inspired by it. And, you know, we're pretty proud of the songs so far.
You should be proud of the songs, especially because you've chosen to, thank you, use this time like constructively. Everybody's at home feeling isolated and frustrated right now. And you channeled that into something positive, even if it comes off a little aggressive, a little high energy.
Yeah, like I said, man, I've always considered myself more of a yeller. So I think everything I do is like, everybody's like, dude, stop yelling.
Nah, you're our old yeller.
That's what we need, though. I remember 4 years ago when the He Who Should Not Be Named presidency first started, everyone's like, we're going to get rebellion music again. Like, it's going to happen. Like, the punk stuff is going to come out. Like, we're going to get another American Idiot album. And stuff came out within those 4 years, but my biggest complaint is they weren't angry enough. They were sad. which genuinely, yeah, a lot of us were sad, but like, I think they kind of missed the whole anger portion of it.
Yeah.
And it's like, all of us are so angry.
I think also, like, for me, you know, I was really sad, you know, when this administration got into office, but that kind of turned more into anger when I think, you know, for me being stuck at home like everybody else and just kind of seeing what was happening with the pandemic and the civil unrest and how it wasn't being addressed properly. And so my sadness kind of turned into more anger. And I think that's what kind of caused us to start writing these songs.
I have a question for you that you probably didn't assume you'd ever be asked, but you know, the Middle Eastern community out in Los Angeles is pretty divisive on whether they love Trump or they don't. Do you have, you know, friends and family members from the Persian community that just completely disagree with everything you're saying with Fear No Empire?
Well, here's the thing. From my understanding, and I could be completely wrong, I feel like the people, the Iranian people that support Trump are doing it because they feel like, obviously, the Iranian community that is here came here when the revolution happened. So they are against the current political government there, right? So they're here, and a majority of the Iranians here want there to be change in Iran, the government to be changed. And from what I understand, those that mainly support Trump here think that he's so kind of erratic and irrational that he would be someone that might attack the government there and overthrow the government there, so that the younger generation has an ability to grow up in a society that there's more of a future. And I think that is the main thing why Iranians support Trump here, is because they hope that he would do something in the government of Iran and change the government there. Well, and not so much possibly what like he's all about here.
Well, because you spoke about how, you know, how Zebrahead does very well in Japan. And for my honeymoon, I was fortunate enough to go to Southeast Asia. So I was in Vietnam and I was in Cambodia, and I went to Japan as well, just because it's one of the best countries in the world. It's insane. I'm sure you can agree on that. But in Vietnam, two different cities, it was like a month after Trump got elected, my tour guide was openly, like, very vocally pro-Trump. And then the next city I got to, they were just lambasting him the whole time. So I've noted the divide amongst, you know, Persians, amongst Israelis out here, amongst a lot of people from the Middle East. Okay, good. I almost said the Midwest because I live there. But from the Middle East that, you know, that really are like, no, Trump's the guy or fuck Trump. And I'm glad you're on the other side.
Yeah. I mean, obviously everybody has an opinion and they're welcome to their opinion. It's just, you know, you have to see what the reason for that is. Like, is it what he's doing here, or is it something that can benefit different parts of the world in which they want change in, and they think Trump is the answer because no other politician has done that prior, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it's weird to see that some of the reasons he's liked overseas is the reasons why he's liked here. We need a big, strong man to bash down doors that we think need to be bashed down, and we think he will. Even if he's a bad guy, he's going to... Yeah, so we do see that internationally a lot. And do you think that in a similar way, your music has international play or an effect of radicalizing those internationally to be more active?
Well, so here's the thing. Obviously, you know, we haven't toured with this band. With Zebrahead, you know, when you're touring, you get to talk to fans and kind of get their perspective on why they relate to the songs or what they are interested in with your music. With this, I've done some interviews and stuff, and I haven't had the opportunity to actually like interact with somebody face to face and say, hey, you know, like, why do you like Fear No Empire? Or what about this song, like, you know, speaks to you? We started this band because we wanted to use our platform and use our voice to talk about issues that we thought were important. And the only thing we really expected out of that was it would encourage people in whatever walk of life they're in to use whatever platform they have to discuss things and talk about things that are important to them and affect their communities. And that's all we can, you know, that's all we really wanted.
Right. Exactly. Maybe no delusions of grandeur. You just wanted to get the word out and hopefully inspire somebody, including the international community.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think music, that's one of the greatest things about music. It is it has such an ability to inspire. And especially right now, sitting at home, we felt so powerless. We felt like, you know, we had to do something. And so we started Fear No Empire.
Hell yeah. And like Scott said, the difference between like Rage Against the Machine and Audioslave, there's actually nothing wrong with just making the music that you want to make. If that's what's in your heart, put it out there. But I mean, Rage Against the Machine is played at protests. So I think that your music has the potential to do that as well. I think the next time I go out protesting,
Trump rallies.
Yeah. Or Trump will start playing it and you'll have to send a cease and desist.
Oh, I would love to be a part of that.
Dude, it's just hilarious. Some of the songs he plays, he has no idea like what they're about or anything.
Right.
Like YMCA.
Wait, sorry. Well, Ronald Reagan was playing Born in the USA, which is an anti-war song.
Right. Trump's playing Fortunate Son. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think next protest I attend, I'll have to bring a speaker and just blast some of that new FNE.
I'll pay you $20.
Okay. All right.
Oh, he's offering these Persian meals and $20, man. You guys must be really big in Japan.
I'm actually curious to get your take on something because a lot of things that like I'd rather say like the radical right like to do whenever a musician or a celebrity comes out with a political opinion, it's always like, just make music. What are you doing? As if music isn't inherently political always all the time and has been since the beginning of time. But I think like the role of government within the music industry as well, especially the mishandling of the pandemic and the music industry suffering the consequences. How have you as a musician like kind of thought about that, especially in the midst of this election? Like Joe Biden put out that political ad with the Beastie Boys song, the first time Beastie Boys ever let them use their music, that got to have pulled down. It's the first time I've ever seen a political ad focusing on the music industry.
Yeah, I mean, it's really that's a difficult thing because as a citizen, as a human being, I'm affected by these things, right? If I was a banker, maybe I can talk to my coworkers about how I feel, right? As a musician, I have the platform to talk about issues that are important to me, and I can use that platform to you know get other people talking about it. It really doesn't make sense to me. That argument doesn't really make sense to me. I know the administration has gone after LeBron James because they feel like, oh, you know, shut up and dribble. Well, if you look at what LeBron James has done, he has been such a positive point of focus for the Black community and all the great things he's done because he used his platform as a basketball player to bring into light all these issues that his community is facing. As a musician, I feel like, if I don't use my platform for things that are important to me, things that are important to people in, you know, my community, I'm wasting, you know, an opportunity. And I don't think that argument really makes a lot of sense. I think people use that argument when they, don't have, you know, something true and valid to say back to a musician who is, you know, talking about things that are important to him.
I think that argument is used when a musician like praises a political person on the opposite side. So if I go and say, you know, if the City Drive became the biggest band in the world or Lido Beach, and I went up there and I was like, vote for Biden, people would be like, shut up and play your guitar. But if I said vote for Trump, like I don't think that the left would have said that. I think it would have been like fuck that guy.
Yeah.
No one's ever told Kid Rock to shut up and play.
Yeah.
But So you bring up a good point that, yeah, exactly. Not just as a musician, but like as a citizen, do you have a right and even an obligation to speak out about what you think is unjust?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important, especially right now when, you know, so many of us feel helpless. And there's so many different things now, whereas, you know, like social media and things like that, where it's easier to get your idea or your, whatever issue you want to talk about out to other people that can possibly relate to it. And, you know, in a lot of ways, it connects people as much as it, you know, does divide people. That angle of it has a way to connect people, which is, I think, very useful and very important.
Now, a question about logistics, because obviously you guys haven't played any shows as Fear No Empire yet, correct? Unless I missed it and I'm really upset.
Yeah, no. We honestly, like, we've only seen each other a handful of times just because everybody's, you know, been quarantining. So no shows yet, but we're really eager.
Are you planning on doing like this tour where Dan Palmer's exhausted with both Zebrahead and Death by Stereo?
Oh, dude, Dan Palmer doesn't get exhausted.
What?
Never. I've been touring with this guy for years now. He will go to bed at like, I don't know, 6, 7 a.m. and then he'll be up at 10 and pushing everybody to go sightseeing. That dude just never sleeps.
Well, it's the mustache. It's got all this energy in it.
It's like the Samson mustache.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
Wait, what was that really popular energy drink that's no longer here? Was Tab an energy drink?
No, that was just a regular soda.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Jolt Cola.
Jolt.
You guys remember Jolt?
Jolt.
Yes.
Okay, so it's basically hyper-caffeinated soda.
Okay.
So I think that their tagline was like something like 3 or 4 times the amount of caffeine as regular soda. So it's kind of like Red Bull. So that's Dan.
That's Dan.
Right.
Totally.
What's up, soda with Red Bull?
So now, this is where I'd normally ask for like a day in the life of a, you know, totally legit rock star like yourself. But of course, times is weird right now. So maybe instead I want to know, how has your day-to-day life changed from before March of this year until after in terms of your musical work?
You know, before the pandemic, we were touring so much. Zebrahead is constantly on tour. So when we do get a break, it's usually to write the next album, right? So in this case, like, also because you're gone so much, when you get home, you're like, it's your family, your friends, your loved ones, right? When this all happened, it's just like you're just kind of like secluded, you know, like everybody else. And so for me, I was really excited to work on music. And it kind of re-energized me. So honestly, like I work on music so much more now, during the pandemic than I had for Zebrahead, simply because we don't write on tour. We're everybody's just like doing everything. Everybody's like batshit crazy. Dan's over here. Ben's gone. You know, I don't know where Maddie is. We never write music. So when we come home, it's like, all right, we have, you know, we got to write 10 songs. And so it's kind of forced, like a time period, right? With Fear No Empire, it's like an outlet, because I just either I'm going to do this or I'm going to punch my TV, right? So I go and sit down in my little studio here at home and then just like start working on music, and it's a great outlet. And it's been really refreshing to me, because it's a different outlook on writing for me. So that's the only good things, you know, that has happened for me during this time, is it made me appreciate writing music in a different way.
Fear No Empire, Punch No Television. So do you have a home set up for recording? Because obviously I know you yell, so that might alienate your neighbors.
Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody's got their little studios at home now. It's so much easier to share ideas. And my neighbors know that I'm a yeller, so they're pretty cool with it. No complaints yet, but yeah, man, it's really...
There's always time.
What's that?
There's always time.
There's always time. Yeah. But yeah, it's a cool little setup, and we just send each other ideas through Dropbox now.
Nice. Yeah. Fear No Neighbors.
Fear No Neighbor.
Dropbox, sponsor us, please.
Yeah. Now, and in a similar question, I hate to do this, but we're already coming near the end of segment two.
What?
We covered so much ground. I could give you a second hour. Maybe I'll invite you over to my place and just chit-chat with you.
Daylight saving.
Dude, let's do it.
Over a nice plate of gourmet sabzi. But,
oh, my God.
What's on the horizon for you? What do you think, even though with all the tumultuous craziness of early November, what do you think is coming up on the horizon for you?
Well, I mean, we had a bunch of shows scheduled for Zebrahead that were supposed to happen this last summer. Hopefully now everything's going to happen next summer. There's a festival called Slam Dunk Festival that is in May that we're hoping to play and to make up all the other shows that got rescheduled. So that's the plan. We get a handle on this pandemic and things get a little bit better where we can start living our normal lives again. But we're really looking forward to playing shows. And with Fear No Empire too, once this, stops where people can come together again, we hope to be able to play a bunch of shows with Fear No Empire as well.
I was supposed to be at the Slam Dunk Festival with Zebrahead. Some was headlining and Frank was playing. Actually, it was supposed to be his first show, his first solo show.
Nice.
So that would have been fun. We wanted you on, man. I actually targeted you when I asked Dan. I was like, yo, Dan, can you get Ali on? I love Fear No Empire. Let's do this.
Good.
I appreciate it, buddy. Thank you, man. I really, really do appreciate you guys taking time to do this.
My channel choice for yelling has been ABC News. And with that, we only have 1 minute left. And I want you to be able to shout out everything that you are doing and where people can find you and listen to all your music.
Awesome. Well, thanks. Yeah. Fear No Empire, we have a Fear No Empire Instagram, Facebook, .com, Zebrahead, all the same. You can check out our music on Spotify, both bands. And also please just keep an eye on our website or our social medias when everything picks up again. We're going to be doing a lot of touring. So hopefully we can all hang out, and thank you for supporting me and Zebrahead and Fear No Empire for the last 25, 26 years. Honestly, we couldn't do any of this without our fans, and we love you. We hope you're safe, and, everybody, please take care of one another because we're in this together.
Hell yeah. And now, final shout out. Do you have a personal Instagram?
Yeah, it's Ali1Louder at Instagram and Twitter.
Awesome. Because everybody needs to make sure that they follow you there. Because if you haven't Googled Ali Tabba Tabba E plus Shredded by now, you are missing out, because this dude is straight up shredded. You could grate cheese on his abs. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Waldman's Words here on IW Radio. That's Scott Lewis Waldman.
Brain pain.
That's Emily Burke. I'm Jed Fuchs. You can listen to us live on Adobe every Tuesday afternoon at 5 p.m. Pacific. You can catch us live on Twitch on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific. Follow us at Waldman's Words everywhere. Ladies and gentlemen, Ali Tabba Tabba E on the show today.
Thanks, you guys. I appreciate it.
Joining us, bud.